You can stay, turn to Ezekiel 34. I suggest, or you can also go ahead and keep your place at Matthew chapter 1. We'll be going back and forth between Ezekiel 34 and Matthew chapter 1. Bones talked about John 3:16 and Jesus as the only begotten Son. If you start out in Matthew chapter 1, and if you use the King James or the American Standard Version, you run into a whole bunch of begats or begots. Now, many of us in this room have begotten, though we might not say it that way. We have fathered children. I don't think I called my father the day my children were born and said, "Hey, your son begot someone today," right? It's not language we use. It's also this genealogy that Matthew opens up with that maybe, I don't know, lulls us to sleep or we're not familiar with it. But Matthew has some significant things to say and a specific purpose for that. Matthew's gospel was written to the Jews. And I want to emphasize that point this morning. It was written to the Jews. Many traditions say that when Matthew first wrote it, he actually wrote it in Hebrew, which is the language of the Jews. But thankfully, this gospel written to the Jews was for the salvation of all people. The genealogy bears out that it was for all people. And the only way you get a genealogy like that to work out well is by God's plan. Matthew gives us a gospel written to the Jews for the salvation of all by God's eternal plan. I want you to think for a moment what life would be like if we did not have the gospel of Matthew. Some consider the gospel of Matthew to be the most widely read book, period. The most widely read book, the gospel of Matthew. And I don't know exactly how they get to that conclusion. Maybe it's because the Bible is consistently the most purchased and distributed book around the world ever, and that most people start off in the New Testament, and so where do you start off with? You start off with Matthew, and at least, you know, you get to Matthew chapter 1. We wouldn't have that. You'd have another bestseller. Someone would be a millionaire or a billionaire, right? If the Bible didn't get in the way of all that purchasing. The great composer Bach composed a piece called St. Matthew's Passion based upon chapters 26 and 27 of the book of Matthew. And so we would be without this classical masterpiece, this piece of classical music that is considered to be a masterpiece. You can YouTube St. Matthew's Passion, and it's an hour and a half. So next time you're in the car or driving along and you've got your 3G or your 4G network, you know, you just listen to a little Bach while you're cruising along. You think he fathomed, he was writing on this piece that people would be walking around with cell phones listening to his music? It's crazy, isn't it? If we didn't have the book of Matthew, we wouldn't know about the wise men. We wouldn't know about the Sermon on the Mount. Think about that. The moral teaching that we get through the Sermon on the Mount is in the book of Matthew. It's repeated some in Luke, but the body of it is in the book of Matthew. Matthew shares with us parables, explanations of the kingdom. Have you ever tried to wrap your mind around the kingdom of God? It's difficult, and yet Matthew gives us parables that help us to understand. It's not all happy things that Matthew gives us. He gives us some of the most scalding rebukes of those who were religious leaders. We had a preacher's conference this past end of the week, and the comment was made that if Jesus came, he probably would have had the hardest thing to say to a group of preachers like us, right? Because he went to the religious leaders and laid into them. We also have the Great Commission. What would the world be like without the Gospel of Matthew? Thankfully, this is a book that we have. A perfect God takes this beautiful gospel and he gives it to an imperfect man, to Matthew. You know, he's a tax collector of all things. Yeah? Trust your tax collector? Gives it to Matthew, an imperfect man, and he's supposed to go share this with a stubborn people, the Jews. And then they're tasked with sharing this message with a lost world. Such an incredible book, such a rich collection of things we get, and yet he starts off with the genealogy. We have any people who are sort of genealogy buffs? Like you do that with your own family and you're excited about that? Some people are. It's not really for everybody. Turn over to Matthew chapter 1. Keep your finger in Ezekiel. We'll come back. Let's go over to Matthew chapter 1. Here is a list of all of the names. I took the liberty of adding Bathsheba. She's known as the wife of Uriah, but I went ahead and put her name in there. But the rest of them are listed as they're listed in Matthew chapter 1. Now look how this book starts out. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Matthew breaks this up into three historical sections, and it goes from Abraham's descendants, which is about 1,000 years, and then it goes to David's descendants, which is about 400 years, and then it finishes up with the exile, which is about 600 years. If you do the math, you figure out there's some names missing, and so Matthew wasn't as concerned with getting every single person's name in there as he was with, what do you think? Was showing us the genealogy of Jesus Christ. And so sometime you skip from grandpa to grandson or from great-grandfather to great-grandson. But we start out not at the beginning with Adam, not even with Abraham, but we start right in the middle. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. These are Jewish heroes, and if you were a Jew, these names would have incredible significance for you. And so you get this gospel that's supposed to be about Jesus, and the first thing it says is, if you value David and if you value Abraham, then this book is for you. And already you're interested. Do you remember what Ross read in Ezekiel 34? It wasn't by accident that they were waiting for another David to come. Now, go back to Ezekiel 34. This is another scalding rebuke of religious leaders. If you ever get fed up with religious people who are in charge, well, God was fed up with them often too. But he provides a solution. And after he gets after the shepherds of Israel, he comes in Ezekiel 34, verse 20. He says, "Therefore, thus says the Lord God to them, behold, I myself will judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep, because you push with side and shoulder. You thrust at the weak with your horns till you have scattered them abroad. I will rescue my flock." The Jewish people were looking for a rescuer like a King David. They were looking for someone who would bless all nations. Remember how God promised Abraham, "I will bless all nations through you"? This is what they were waiting for, and this is what God is prophesying for them. Verse 22, "I will rescue my flock. They shall no longer be prey, and I will judge between sheep and sheep, and I will set up over them one shepherd, my servant, David." Where is David in Ezekiel 34? He's dead. He's in the grave, and he's not coming back. And yet there is a David, a son of David, who God says, "I'm going to come, and I'm going to come as the servant David, and I'm going to rescue you. And he will feed them, and he shall be like a shepherd to them." He just got done saying how the Jewish shepherds had done them wrong, but that he was going to come and shepherd them. "And I, the Lord, will be their God, and my servant David will be prince among them. I am the Lord, I have spoken." Let's skip a few slides here. A common question for the day, as Matthew goes on to tell us later in his book, the Jews, because of Ezekiel and because of the other prophets, as we've been studying, were looking for the Messiah to come out of their lineage. And a common question you would hear, as they would say in Matthew 12:23, well, could this man be the son of David? If someone came along and they were a powerful leader or they had influence or they were a great teacher and they did things that weren't explainable, it was a common question. Could this be the son of David? Could this be the son of David? The question comes up again here. Whose son is the Christ? Well, the son of David is going to be the Messiah and the Christ. There was the connection in the mind of the Jew that a Messiah was coming and he would be the son of David. Matthew 21, verse 9. Hosanna to the Son of David. The Son of David is going to save us, is what that phrase means. This was what they had firmly planted in their mind. What does this have to say to me? We'll get to some of the application after we go through the explanation of some of the genealogy. But as a Gentile, okay, so me, David Shipley, if I was alive in the days of Jesus, Jesus would not have come to me. When Jesus came, we like to think that Jesus came to save the whole world, and he did. But in his short time on this earth, as these scriptures up here will attest to, Matthew 10, 5 and 6, Matthew 15, 24, Jesus says, I have come to the lost sheep of Israel. I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. Jesus would not have come looking for me. That's what he sent his apostles out to do. Jesus came and sought the lost sheep of Israel, and then out of Israel they were to take the gospel to the rest of the world. While Matthew's gospel is for everyone to know about, it was first given to the Jews. We'll revisit the significance of that later. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 1. Read with me verses 2 through 6. Abraham was the father of Isaac, or Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac the father of Jacob, and Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. If Matthew was a Texan, right, he might say Judah and his kin, right, his kinfolk. Judah the father of Perez and Zerah by Tamar, and Perez the father of Hezron, and Hezron the father of Ram, and Ram the father of Amminadab, Amminadab the father of Nahshon, and Nahshon the father of Salmon, and Salmon the father of Boaz by Ruth, and Ruth the father of Obed by Ruth, and Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David the king, and David was the father of Solomon by the wife of Uriah. You know, we all have family stories that we are proud to share with one another. Do you have those stories? That maybe it's about your father or your mother, or a brother and a sister, or a grandfather, or something up your lineage that you're really proud to share. Do you have any of those stories that you don't want anyone to know? And really the only place that it might show up is like an abnormal psychology textbook? Right? Hopefully long after you're dead and it's not going to be a big embarrassment, right? But, I mean, we have those. There's stories I'd be proud to tell you, and there's stories that I have that, boy, I'd rather you not know, and if you did, I wish you didn't. If you know anything about the story of Judah and Tamar, that's one of those stories that wow, there was some warped thinking going on there. Go back and read that story for yourself. Even the greatness of David. I mean, David found this woman, and he killed his wife, and then he took her.
Killed her husband.
I'll etch that in on my notes. Thank you. David killed Bathsheba's husband, and then took Bathsheba as his own wife. I mean, there's some problems in that family as well. You know, in the book of Chronicles, that little story is sort of rubbed out, trying to give a sanitized view of maybe what the kings did. And so even the Jews tried to hide that. We see God's mission of saving all souls. Read down through this genealogy here, and you've got people who are steeped in sin, and you've got people who are heroes of the family. You've got people who are rich, and you've got people who are poor. You have kings, and you have servants. You have Jews, and you even have Gentiles. You have men, and you have women. Now, in Matthew's day, if he sat down and he was like, I want to do this politically correct, he would not have put women inside of this genealogy. The establishment would have said, no, that's going to wreck your credibility. Don't put women inside of this genealogy. And yet, in these first couple verses here, we have five of them. I guess we get down to Mary later on. But we see God's mission. And though it came to the Jewish people and God was establishing his oneness, right? From the beginning, God wants all people to be his people. And so he selected one nation. This is my nation, not because they deserve it, but because I love them. And I want to bring all people into this nation. You see throughout the genealogy that God is reaching out to all sorts of people. And he's using all sorts of people to bring about his salvation. Remember what Ezekiel said, God's eternal plan to bless everyone through his servant David. You know, another thing that this shows us, and we'll get into some of this a little bit later, but where man so often gets it wrong, where David messed things up and mistreated women, suddenly we see the Messiah, we see Jesus, and he gets it right. He elevates women, and he honors women, and he respects them, and he includes them in his work. We see this recapping of the history of Israel. As you read through the book of Matthew, you see instances where Matthew says, you know, Jesus came out of Egypt to fulfill prophecy. Remember Israel, they came out of Egypt, and they were freed from Egypt, and they went into this time of testing in the wilderness. And how did they do during their time in the wilderness? They really failed miserably. Even Moses, who gave them the law, eventually stumbled and sort of put himself in the place of God at moments. And yet Jesus comes and he goes out into the wilderness after he comes out of Egypt and he gets it right. He doesn't test God. He honors God. We see Jesus getting it right. Where Israel failed and where David failed, Jesus comes and gets it right. Where so many times man has failed over the years, Jesus comes and shows the way. Matthew's gospel reveals a diversity of begats. There's all kinds of begetting going on here. And yet it brings us all to the only begotten Son of God. It's a gospel that was to the Jews, and so it helps to read it through a Jewish lens, or at least understand their circumstances. It's for everyone. It's a powerful statement of what God can do. And yet we have to remember that it's by God's eternal plan. Matthew was attentive to detail, not only in his tax keeping, but also in his writing of history here. For instance, in verse 3, it talks about Judah had Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Okay, Perez and Zerah, their father was Judah and their mother was Tamar. And so you would expect that when the son of David comes, that he would sort of be in that same essence, right? He would have a mother and he would have a father, just like it's always happened. There's over 40 begets here, and all of them are the same. There's a man and there's a woman, and they come together and they have a child. Your parents can explain, you know, the details of that to you, how that all works later, right? But then we get down to Jesus, verse 16, and Jacob, the father of Joseph, by Mary had Jesus? Is that what it says? No, because you see, Joseph wasn't really Jesus' father. And Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom Jesus was born. Jesus was born of Mary, not of Joseph. And that's not just a minor detail. That fact right there would have startled the Jews. Not even Jesus' parentage is what you might expect. How can he only be born of a woman? That's not expected. What else do you get from this well-known genealogy, right? What were they expecting? What were the Jews expecting? They wanted a man who was born of a legitimate father and woman. They expected someone who was powerful. They expected someone who was wealthy. They expected someone who was regal, right? Kingly. And yet what they get is the adopted son of a poor carpenter who left behind no children. Does this genealogy continue after Jesus? I mean, as far as Jesus is concerned? No, it ends, right? What begins with Abraham and comes to Jesus, it stops there. He doesn't even have children, right? That's supposed to be the greatness of a man, is to have offspring, and Jesus doesn't even get that. And so realize, as a Jew, you're reading this, and in so many ways, this just is not computing. He's an adopted son, okay? It's a poor carpenter's son, okay? And he doesn't leave any posterity. He doesn't continue the line. Indeed, though this is what they were waiting for, it was more than the Jews could accept. Matthew often quotes the book of Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 6, verse 8, "And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Who shall I send? Who will go for us?' Then I said, 'Here am I, send me.' And he said, 'Go and say to this people, keep on hearing, but do not understand.'" How many times have they understood this genealogy, and yet when it comes to Jesus, they don't understand it? "Keep on seeing, but do not perceive." How many times have we read through this genealogy and yet not perceived what God is doing? "Make the heart of the people dull and their ears heavy, and blind their eyes, lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn and be healed." The Son of God was who they were waiting for. The Son of David was who they were eagerly waiting for, but it was not who they were expecting. And so Matthew gives them this family tree. Might they have rejected this promise of Jesus because they were afraid it would stir up some feelings in their own family tree? Maybe you've been there, where maybe you were there when you were coming to Christ, or maybe you're there right now, and Christ is asking you to do things, and you think, "Well, Grandpa wouldn't have liked that. Or if I do this, what does this say about the choices my parents have made?" This isn't just a boring genealogy. Matthew puts it in here, and it would have rocked their world, as I'm sure it has some of us. We'll come back to that. I want to recap the lessons that we can take from this genealogy. First of all, this gospel was first to the Jews. Now, we don't worship the Jews, and you don't have to be a Jew to understand this, but we humbly owe a great debt to God's work in the Old Testament. Not worship the Old Testament, not worship the Jews, but we owe a great debt to what God was doing centuries and millennia before we came along. We need to know our Old Testament better because this is our heritage. Otherwise, we might not fully understand Matthew because he quotes the Old Testament more frequently than any other of the New Testament writers. It is not our own goodness that has brought us to the church today, but the willingness of thousands of others who have faithfully passed on their faith and those who preach to us. Maybe it wasn't a Jew who preached to you, right? But Paul and Peter and all of those first apostles were Jews. And thankfully they preached. And thankfully they reached out to those who were not of their own. I think it's a wonderful example. What does it mean that the gospel is for all? That Matthew's gospel is for all. It was to the Jews, but we know that it's for everybody. Only God's gospel can bring us into the eternal oneness. I'd like to talk more about this later, but that's really what heaven is going to be about. In the beginning, there was God, and he was with his people in the garden, and everything was one, and it was at peace. And more than what heaven is going to look like, we're going to be one with God and one with each other. One God, one nation, one church. Do you understand his goal? He's trying to get us all back together. But so often when we try and get back together, we run after the latest fad. I mean, the Jews had lots of fads. It wasn't in the form of like an exercise program or a diet or something like that. They had people coming along pretending to be a Messiah. Read through Acts chapter 5, and the Jewish leaders say, "Well, there was this guy, and he rose up, and carried away a lot of people promising salvation, but then he died. And then this other fella got up promising salvation, but then he died. Follow this man, do this thing. But this boring genealogy connects Jesus as more than a fad, as more than the latest, you know, exciting thing. God says, and Matthew says, this has been in the works, and God is consistent. And this isn't a quick fix, but it's something that demands your life. We have a lot of programs and ministries, and we actually have a lot of buildings, right? We have two buildings. We have a lot of preachers, and all four of those things are going to fail you at some point. And where all of these things fall short, Jesus will never fall short. He was the one promised since before time. He was the one the Jews eagerly looked to, and he's the one that Matthew is trying to get us to look to now. Where man fails, where David failed to treat women correctly, where Moses failed to give God the honor, where Abraham failed, remember where he's like, you know, she's not my wife, she's my sister, right? Where he sort of even failed his own wife. Jesus will never fail his bride, the church. Jesus is never going to turn an eye and act like we're not his. The gospel was written to the Jews, and we owe a great debt to God's work in the Old Testament. It's for everyone, because only God's gospel can bring us all together the way it should. And finally, by God's perfect providence and grace, we either accept God's way in obedience, or we reject God's way in favor of our own way. Like I said before, accepting Matthew's list of begats, right? Accepting that all of this ends in Jesus Christ upset many a Jew's family tree. Do you realize that for a Jew to accept Christ was to reject the wisest grandfather they ever had, right? Grandpa Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived. Do you remember how Solomon died? He died with his heart away from God, because he wasn't living in obedience to God. And so for a Jew now to become obedient to Jesus in God's way, they would have to say, you know, I reject Grandpa Solomon's choices. Now Solomon is in God's hands, and God's going to do what he deems right with him. But are you going to make that choice to obey God, or are you going to worry about what Grandpa Solomon wants you to do? Accepting Matthew's claim meant to the Jew standing against false tradition, maybe some false family beliefs. Now, nothing in Matthew's gospel calls us to, you know, spit in the face of someone else, or to obey Jesus in a way that's disrespectful or nasty. But it may require us to make a choice that others have failed to make. Will we be pleasing to God? I know that you want yourself to know truth, and I know that you want your children to know truth. And I don't know what state Solomon is in, but I think even though he made the wrong choice, once he knew everything, I think he would say, I hope my children get it right. Thankfully, we have Matthew's gospel. There is a blessing and a kingdom for those who admit their spiritual poverty. There is eternal fulfillment for those following their hunger and thirst for righteousness. This is the promise that is found in this book. We have a gospel that was given to the Jews and is meant for all people, and it's by God's divine hand. And we're very grateful and thankful that we have it. If we can help you in your walk with God, if we can help you to know this gospel and how to obey the gospel, have you obeyed the gospel? If you need to do that, please come forward while we stand and sing together.